Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, welcome to the Shame Free Zone. It's another Monday evening, and we've got a really interesting topic tonight. My guest, returning, Kathy Lambrioli. Sorry about that. She's a counselor and a nurse, and calls herself a card-carrying bisexual. Says she's been one since 1969. I think that will get our conversation off to a good start. Kathy, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Now,
love to be in the Shame-Free Zone.
Well, you do your part to promote a shame-free world.
We do our best to create those shame-free spaces.
Before we get started, do you have a book or a website or something that you wanted to pitch?
I do have a book that is not about bisexuality, per se. It is called Love in Abundance, A Counselor's Advice on Open Relationships, and it's about open relationships, non-monogamy, and polyamory.
Yeah, and I understand you just got back from Chicago, didn't you? You were teaching workshops at the Kinky College on bisexuality, polyamory, and BDSM.
And that was really a lot of fun, definitely. Conference there.
I'm wondering if some of my friends were there.
Probably so. It's called Kinky College, the Institute of Higher Yearning. And had quite a lot of fantastic classes on all kinds of subjects.
Was Reid Mihalko there?
What's that?
Reid Mihalko, was he there?
No, he was not.
No.
Not that I know of, anyway.
Yeah, well, if he had been there, you would have known.
Yes, true, probably, because I have met him at other conferences.
He's usually teaching if he's there.
Mm-hmm.
So, welcome back from Chicago.
Thank you.
And just exactly what do you mean, a card-carrying bisexual?
Well, what I mean by that is that I've been out of the closet and someone who has identified as bisexual since that time. And it's difficult for bisexuals to really develop a bisexual identity and to identify openly as bisexual. And it was even harder in those days.
Yeah.
But it's getting a lot more easy now, a lot easier.
Well, and that really does bring up an interesting point, which I think is that when it comes to females, it almost seems like everybody is bisexual. I mean, you know, you got Britney Spears kissing Madonna, and Katy Perry is singing "I Kissed a Girl and I Liked It." And so, I think it might be a little difficult for some people to even understand why we had to come out of the closet a long time ago.
Well, it is. There is some kind of a strange bisexual chic that seems to be attached to, particularly like movie stars and glamorous women being openly sort of flirting in some way with other women, but it's in a way a safe way for them to do that without actually taking a big risk.
Well, explain that further. What do you mean it's a safe way?
Well, because they're just flirting and kind of acting out in public. There doesn't seem to be any kind of real bisexuality behind it. It's just all an act.
Well, you know, that is how it seems to me too a lot of times. But I'm sure that some of these people are actually hooking up sometimes. Not Britney Spears and Madonna, but you know, there does seem to be almost that it is kind of in right now for women to have sex with other women. And it doesn't feel like it's an authentic reflection of one's true sexuality. Like it's just kind of the thing of the moment.
Well, I think there's a combination of factors at work there. One is just plain old sexism, and that is that women's sexuality is not taken seriously or seen as real or powerful. And so it is seen by men as being sort of harmless for two women to kiss or even have sex.
Right.
They are underestimating the power of women's sexuality. Whereas if two men would kiss or flirt or have sex, then suddenly that's a big deal because male sexuality is seen as real.
Mm-hmm.
And powerful.
And more threatening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whereas women's sexuality is somehow seen as harmless or not
well,
really sexual.
It's actually
little do they know.
It is actually co-opted, don't you think? It's like, yes,
you girls
yeah. can get together as long as it's for my viewing pleasure.
Well, as long as the man feels like he's going to get in on it at some point.
Yeah, exactly.
That it's just titillating to him and he feels like he's going to be able to get involved in the sexual situation as well.
Right.
If they really were saying, if the two women were really saying, we're lesbians, get out of here, we don't want anything to do with you, it wouldn't suddenly would not be so titillating anymore.
I remember I had a female lover for a year who happened to be married. We were together for a year, and she was married and had three kids. And the first time that she and I hooked up, her husband knew all about, you know, the fact that she'd gone out on a date with me. But he was calling every hour to see if she was done and if she was coming home.
Oh, gosh. Wow.
And,
I hope you got over that.
Oh, she kept going, no, goodbye. You know, 3 hours later, I know some men, it seems like that. It's like, how can you make love for 3 hours? And it's like, if only you knew.
They have no idea. Yeah.
Well, fortunately, some men do.
That's true. It's true.
But they're not the majority. The majority are scratching their heads, really kind of perplexed. It's like, how does that work? So needless to say, he was not a man who felt like our sexual bond with each other was harmless.
That he was kind of felt threatened by it and was
about it. Yeah. Definitely saw it as threatening. So,
But it is a very different situation for men, for bisexual men, that male-on-male sexuality is seen as much more taboo, much more threatening.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it definitely is.
Because it's so much more real.
Yeah, it is. For when women have sex with women, it's kind of like, oh, well, that's normal, or you're just playing around, or you're experimenting, or you're not really a lesbian. But if two men have sex with each other, then it's like, oh, my God, you're gay.
Right, when they are maybe bisexual or they may be gay, you know, we don't know.
Yeah, or they could be experimenting, too.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that, about the whole sexual orientation thing? You know, Alfred Kinsey had his scale, and if you were a six, you were right in the middle, and then as I'm always telling my clients, I go, well, there's the person who's really, really gay and the person who's really, really straight, and that's at the end of the, you know, opposite ends of the continuum. Mm-hmm. But look at all the space in between.
That's right. Well, Alfred Kinsey, who was also a very famous bisexual himself, really blew the lid off of bisexuality because he did such a monumental study of male sexuality in the 40s, in the 1940s, and then a very monumental study of female sexuality. And he scared America to death by saying that what he discovered was that about 40% of all American males had at least one sexual experience with another man at some point in their lives.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Of course, that was pretty shocking in the 1940s, and that those were primarily, that 40% were primarily heterosexually identified men who were married and had children, and most of them were not gay, they were bisexual. And then he did a monumental study of women's sexuality, and he upset people even more by telling us a couple things that really upset people, one of which was that at least 40% of women had some kind of sexual desire towards other women. Only about 20% of women had actually had a sexual experience with another woman. And this is in the 1940s, remember.
Oh, yeah.
And he also upset everyone by revealing that women masturbated. Apparently before that, no one knew that women masturbated.
Yeah. Just all the doctors who are doing that that massage to relieve hysteria.
That's right. That's right. That's what they were doing. But the Kinsey scale is very useful in that it's people who are at a zero are the heterosexuals, and people who are at a six at the other end of the scale are 100% gay or lesbian. But anyone that's between a one and a five is bisexual, and that's a lot of people.
It really is. And I think that makes people very uncomfortable. I know my mother asked me, she goes, well, how do you know you're bisexual? And I said, well, ever since I was little girl, and then certainly when I got to college and I was 18, I'd see a naked woman, I would, I'd be attracted to her.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was pretty, straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
I'm bisexual because I'm attracted to both genders. My mother says, oh, honey, everybody feels that way.
Oh, that's funny.
Uh-huh. Isn't that hilarious?
Yes, it is. So, yeah. But even though the Kinsey scale is very useful, after Kinsey, Fritz Klein, who was a psychiatrist and also a pioneering bisexual, he came up with a more nuanced scale that's come to be called the Klein Sexual Orientation Grid. He felt that Kinsey's scale was too limiting because it only took into account sexual attraction and sexual behavior, whereas his scale, the Klein Sexual Orientation Grid, takes into account sexual attraction, sexual behavior, those two things that Kinsey took into account with his scale, and sexual fantasies, emotional preference, social preference,
sexual
lifestyle, and self-identification. So he had a much more nuanced approach to what constitutes sexual orientation. It's much bigger than just sexual behavior and sexual attraction.
Well, has anybody advanced the theory that sexual orientation might actually change over time? That it's not something that is static and stays that way forever and ever?
Well, that's certainly true for some people. It's certainly true for some people that either they are not fully aware of their true sexual orientation, and it changes, or they're not aware of exactly what it is, and it evolves over time for them to discover it.
Sure.
It does seem clear, though, that for some people, their orientation is fluid enough that they may feel or believe that they're 100% heterosexual at some points in their lives, and then at other points may discover that they're bisexual, or may even feel that they're exclusively gay or lesbian. That for some people it changes and shifts over time depending on what's going on in their lives, or depending on the kind of relationship that they are in, or who they happen to fall in love with. I mean, many people fall in love at a young age with someone, the first person they fall in love with, and they're just madly, madly in love with that person. They just assume that whatever the gender of that person is must be that's the sexual orientation for them, but it may be much more attached to their connection with that person rather than that person's gender.
Interesting.
And they may not realize that till after that relationship perhaps is over, and they then maybe fall in love with someone else who's of a different gender, and then they're totally perplexed.
Right. Absolutely. They could be totally perplexed, maybe even upset or disturbed.
That certainly happens.
Yeah.
It can cause a real crisis for someone because they've identified their whole life as either gay or straight, and suddenly there's something else is happening that doesn't fit that particular orientation.
And, that brings up an interesting question, which is the whole idea of having terminology like gay, lesbian, straight. I know probably about 15 years ago, I went to a sex educator meeting and was confronted with this term fluid.
Mm-hmm.
Met people who were like, I don't want you to describe me as being a particular orientation. Mm-hmm. I am fluid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wonder, what do you think about that? What do you think about also just the term bisexual, you know?
Well, the term bisexual is seems to be universally hated by people under the age of 40, that most people under that age do not identify with or relate to that term at all.
Yes.
And particularly women in that age group tend to refer to themselves as the sort of all-purpose term queer. I know many, many, many younger women who are... their behavior would indicate that they're bisexual. They have sexual relationships with people of all genders, but they do not use the term bisexual. They call themselves queer because in their belief, anyone who's not 100% heterosexual is just plain queer, and that's it. You know, that's the
sort of
all-purpose term. But I certainly have heard people use the term fluid or... Some people use the term pansexual or ambisexual, and they're
right. And pansexual. So, what is pansexual?
Pansexual is in a way it says the same thing as bisexual, but in the opposite way. Bisexual says a little bit more about what you're not, whereas pansexual says more about what you are. It means that pan means covering the whole spectrum of sexual orientation, so it means that you are open to sexual relationships with anyone of any gender.
Pansexual is a term I've actually heard used in reference to bonobos too. I guess that would enlarge the playing field, so that because bisexual is obviously two, which in and of itself assumes that there are only two genders, male and female.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think people who call themselves pansexual probably have friends who are neither male nor female.
Right. And, I mean, that brings up another very important issue that is making the term bisexual somewhat obsolete, in that because gender has become so much more fluid, you know, over the past 15 years, and so many people are transitioning from the gender of their birth to a different gender.
Right.
And with the hormones and surgery and living as a different gender. Sexual orientation itself, of course, is completely contingent on gender, the gender of your partner. If you're straight, the gender of your partner is, quote, the opposite sex. If you're gay, the gender of your partner is, quote, the same sex. But if there are more than two genders, or if gender no longer exists, or if gender is very fluid, then on what do we hang the concept of sexual orientation? Does sexual orientation even exist if gender doesn't exist, or if gender is fluid?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I mean, it's an interesting thing. And I know when I first encountered the term fluid, I thought, you know, I was upset. I thought, my God, we've been working for visibility for, you know, for decades here, trying to get that term out there so that people had some choices.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed kind of disrespectful to me that, you know, the more, you know, younger people were coming up like, don't hang that label on me.
Mm-hmm.
But then I started thinking, you know, maybe this is actually the compliment. This is where the activism paid off, because now we're moving on to bigger and brighter, you know, concepts. So we don't have to limit ourselves with that kind of terminology.
Mm-hmm. I guess, and isn't that what we've been working for?
You know,
up to a day,
right?
We've been working towards a day when it wouldn't matter, when sexual orientation wouldn't matter, and then we don't have to label ourselves.
It's true. And that brings up the idea of, what about community? Because a lot of times it does seem like, you know, gay and lesbians will oftentimes choose to be in a community that's identified that way. And then if their sexual orientation changes, they may find themselves without a community. Do you live in a heterosexual or bisexual community, or do you even think of those terms?
Well, it's a very big question for anyone who is bisexual. Which community do you live in the most, or do you move back and forth equally between communities?
Right.
And it's very difficult for a lot of bisexual people. It is heavily contingent on the gender of the person or persons they happen to be in a relationship with at that moment. For instance, a lot of bisexual women, if they are in a lesbian relationship at that moment, if they're in a relationship with a woman for some period of years, they would be more likely to live more or less full-time in the lesbian community. It would
right.
just make sense for them to feel more comfortable in that community than in
sure.
a straight community. And in fact, unfortunately, there is not exactly a bisexual community that you could live in. I mean, there are straight neighborhoods, there are gay neighborhoods, there are no, like, bisexual neighborhoods that you could, like, buy a house and move into.
Right. That's true.
And there is, but most cities have a very clear gay community now, you know, a neighborhood or community where gay people live. And there are gay bars and gay restaurants and a gym you can go to where all the people there are gay, and whereas there's not no such thing for bisexuals. So they have to generally choose, well, where are they going to live? Where are they going to work? Where are they going to socialize? How are they going to organize their lives around this sexual orientation issue? And it's not simple at all. Most bisexual people tend to be kind of going back and forth between communities, but they tend to live more in one community than the other, depending on what kind of relationship they're in at that time.
Yeah, yeah, it's very true. So, but you kind of skirted the question. Do you live in a bisexual community, or, I mean, because, you know, you've got access to a lot of things.
Yes, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to ignore that question. I was trying to make a bigger point there. But for me, I definitely go back and forth. I mean, I definitely feel sometimes like a spaceman on Mars. You know, where you're going back and forth, flying back and forth from one planet to the other, and it can actually feel like opposite planets that you're on.
Absolutely.
And because your social life. If your social life involves mostly gay-oriented social activities or friends, then you're excluding your heterosexual friends to some extent. Or if you work in a workplace where most people are straight, then you feel like you're in a more straight environment. Or when you're with your relatives or family, it's a little harder to figure out how to relate to them.
But I tend to go back and forth equally between communities.
Yes,
it's absolutely true.
And many people people have mentioned that being bisexual is in some ways similar to being biracial, in that you tend to not feel accepted in either community and sort of uncomfortably go back and forth between communities, feeling you don't really fit in either place.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah,
I think that happens. It definitely does. So that begs the question, how do you find other bisexual people?
Well, it's certainly a lot easier now than it used to be, partly just because so many more bisexual people are open about their sexual orientation. And it's also a lot easier because of the internet, where people make friends or meet lovers or find apartments or find jobs, or, you know, through the internet, where you can be very, very explicit about who you are and what you're seeking. And that certainly has helped. There's so many more kind of social groups and meetings and social events and things that are explicitly for bisexuals.
So you would recommend that people go online?
That's certainly one place to go. There are lots of groups, though, out in the real world that are easy to find online, easier to connect online with organizations and groups and social events that have to do with, that are oriented toward bisexual people primarily.
Well, What about coming out? Is that an issue anymore? I mean, it sounds like it's an issue for men, maybe not so much for women.
It's a big issue for everyone, just because both the straight world and the gay world tend to discount bisexuality, not take it seriously, and unfortunately, both the gay world and the straight world tend to have the view that there are only two possible choices in being bisexual, that either it's a phase you're going through and you just can't make up your mind, or you're kind of mentally unstable and can't figure out who you are, and that it's either, there's only those two views, either the it's only a phase view or it's a pathological thing view. And so coming out is very difficult, because when you do come out as bisexual, you hear from your friends and family and everyone in your life either, oh, you're just going through a phase and you're really gay and you'll figure it out, or they think, well, there's something wrong with you, you need therapy because you don't know who you really are.
Well, it does seem like it's pretty polarized still, as far as the, you know, those choices, those kind of choices, they do seem very polarized.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that it's either the transitional model or the pathological model of bisexuality, neither are correct.
I just have a problem with all those polarized, you know, like, why would we want... Why would we want, you know, to just have two choices, you know, whether that's gender or, you know, I even pretty well, you know, rebel against the idea that you have to choose to be a man or a woman. Like,
mm-hmm.
my God,
mm-hmm.
right? With all of the points in between, why do we have to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think people just feel more comfortable when they can put you in a box.
Oh, they
and
do.
And say, okay, I think I get you. I think I understand who you are and what you're about. And there's something about bisexuality that is, to some people, subversive, in that it just subverts the idea of a fixed sexual orientation.
Now, you've actually got, or I don't know, I guess you actually say J.R. Little, a psychologist, is the one who came up with 13 types of bisexuals.
Who knew? Who knew there
were
13 types of bisexuals?
I can't wait to find out which kind I am.
Well, I have to say that her model, some of them are fairly similar. I mean, if I were doing this study myself, I would probably have narrowed it down to about 9 or 10. You know, there are a few that are quite similar, but not exactly alike. But there are quite a few different types.
Well, yeah,
and I think
so
that's part of the problem, that people just sort of think we're all one kind of person, and we're not.
Well, for instance, there's an alternating bisexual. Mm-hmm. And I guess an alternating bisexual might have a relationship with man, then after that a relationship with a female partner. So kind of a serial sexual orientation there.
Right, a serial monogamy with first a male partner, then a female, or vice versa.
Right. Mm-hmm. And circumstantial bisexuals, primarily heterosexual, but they might do somebody of the same sex. I guess we're mostly talking about people who are on a ship or in jail, something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm. Right, or you have the classic the girls that go to girls women's colleges that are called LUGs, Lesbians Until Graduation.
LUGs.
Where they have
lesbians.
A lot of sexual relationships with women while
That's
they're
good.
In college, and then they graduate and post-straight, get married, have children, you know, kind of have a very straight lifestyle.
Wow. That's very cute. And then a concurrent relationship bisexual, so you have a primary relationship with one gender, but then casual or secondary relationships with other genders at the same time.
Right, but the primary relationship is with one person. Like they, even if it's maybe like a bisexual woman who marries a man, if
yeah.
she divorces the man, she's going to marry another man. But she'll have relationships. She'll have casual or secondary relationships with women all through her life. whether she's married or not.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. But an emotional bisexual would only choose to have their sex with one gender, but they'd have emotional relationships with both genders.
That's correct. Yes, this is much more true for women that have like very intense romantic relationships with other women, but they don't actually have sex. Their sexual relationships are with men, and they may even be somewhat in denial about the fact that they're having a very intimate romantic relationship with this, with like a best friend or a close woman friend. And they may be very affectionate, and they may write each other love letters and all of that stuff, but they, for some reason, they don't take it to a sexual level.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Very. What's a recreational bisexual?
That's someone who is generally 100% heterosexual, but they will have gay sex under the influence of drugs or alcohol.
Oh, these people sound like a problem to me.
those are your typical closet cases, you know, that they believe that they're 100% heterosexual, but the next day they'll be saying, oh, God, I never would have done that, but I was so drunk, or I never would have done that, but I was
half of Congress.
What's that?
I said half of Congress.
Yes, there you go. That's about right.
Yeah.
And then there's hedonistic bisexuals. Now, this is more often lesbians who are very, they're 100% lesbians, really, but they will do what's called sport fucking on the side, that they'll have sex with men occasionally, you know, casual, very casual.
Really?
And it's just, you know, strictly for fun and, you know, hedonistic sex.
That's
now, most of them would never say they're bisexual. They would say they're lesbians, but they just sport fuck on the side with men.
See, and I've always thought, they're definitely bisexual.
Well, on the other hand, we have to allow people to self-identify. So
absolutely.
If they call themselves lesbians, I'm just going to take their word for it. But, you know, how many guys have they been fucking on the side? You know, it's just a little, at a certain point, it's a little hard to call yourself a bisexual.
Five thinking. Mm-hmm. So, and I guess conditional bisexuals are either straight or gay or lesbian, mm-hmm. but they switch to a relationship with another gender for a specific purpose, like lesbians who get married to men in order to have children.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the other kind of typical example of that is young men who are primarily heterosexual, but they will have a sometimes long-term committed relationship with an older man because that man is in the role of a mentor or like a father figure to them.
Oh, like ancient Greece.
That's, yes, similar to that, or today, you know, it would be more like someone who, an older gay man is taking the young man under his wing and maybe even giving them some help to go to college or, you know, helping them in their career. It's not a sugar daddy situation. It's not that the younger guy is in it for financial support. It's that there's a real deep and intimate relationship there, and it's a kind of a mentor, fatherly kind of relationship. But generally speaking, that is a young man that is primarily heterosexual and is likely to go on at some point to, you know, marry a woman and have a heterosexual life.
Huh.
So they're conditional bisexuals because there's
a reason that given all that room on the Kinsey scale, that there would be a lot of different kinds of bisexuals, you know, because you may be leaning towards the gay side or leaning towards the straight side, or it sounds like there's a lot of diversity here. You've also got the integrated bisexual who has more than one primary relationship at the same time, one with a man and one with a woman.
Right, and you know, you would say that that's pretty similar to concurrent relationship bisexuals, except that the integrated bisexuals have a, you know, strong primary relationships with both genders, whereas the concurrent relationship bisexuals tend to just have their primary relationships are always with one gender. Just casual secondary relationships are always with that other gender.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess you got the isolated bisexual. Now, that's somebody who's 100% straight or gay.
Mm-hmm.
But sometime in the past, they've had one or more sexual experiences with another gender.
Right, right. And that is, as I was mentioning, Alfred Kinsey, his research indicated that at least 40% of all men have had at least one sexual experience with another man, but their primary orientation is heterosexual.
And it seems
that's
like
a lot of people.
you got to wonder how much of this is actually generated by shame.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I what do you think? What's your professional opinion?
How much of what is generated by shame?
Well, a lot of these different ways of being bisexual seem to be ways of coping with embarrassment or shame. Like, you know, I did it because I was in prison, or I did it because I was in finishing school, or
I did it because I was drunk.
Uh-huh. I would only do it for sex. I would never do it for, you know, because I was in love. It's just, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, I'm sure that you're right that a fair amount of any kind of same-sex behavior is dealt with a response of shame because of our own internalized homophobia, as well as the very real externalized homophobia that has very serious consequences, including violence and you know, other kinds of terrible consequences of homophobia if we do come out of the closet and
absolutely
live our lives openly. So, but even without the external fears of consequences, we all have a certain amount of internalized homophobia because we've been raised from birth in a society that hates gay people. And we've, of course, absorbed some of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think some of the fear from the lesbian and the gay community was that bisexuals basically were afraid of that hatred and that prejudice, and therefore were trying to find some kind of a compromise where they could be kind of okay with straight people. But it's interesting.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, back when I was coming out bisexual, and I can only imagine, I came out in 1989,
mm-hmm.
so that's 20 years later, 20 years after you did.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a difficult thing. I had some friends actually in their friendships with me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
People who were straight or gay?
Straight people.
Straight.
Yeah. No, I found gay people were patronizing. Like, yeah, sure, you're bisexual. You'll figure it out, honey.
Oh, God.
And that was very nauseating because I knew I wasn't gay. I knew I wasn't confused.
Mm-hmm.
I was real clear on what I liked and what I didn't like, and I liked both.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but at least there was more acceptance there than there was with some of my straight friends. I remember this one guy, I had gone out with him one time. It was a very casual connection. Uh-huh. We probably had dinner or something. And he came to me very solemnly and said, I heard something that I know is not true. I know it couldn't possibly be true because you are a really nice girl and this just couldn't be true about you.
Uh-huh.
He said, I heard that you're bisexual. And I was like, no, that's true.
Oh, wow.
And he was
shocked,
horrified.
Poor thing. Couldn't handle it.
Yeah, I was absolutely horrified.
Well, it's interesting. You get a very different kind of reaction from straight people than gay people. They react, usually both react badly, but for different reasons. And for particularly with the gay community, it's the women, the lesbians, have a much stronger negative reaction than gay men do to bisexuality. Lesbians often have the reaction that they feel betrayed, or feel that you're just trying to get the privileges of heterosexuality but you're not really straight. You're just trying to say you're bisexual in order to avoid losing those heterosexual privileges. And in fact, you know, bisexual women do enjoy some heterosexual privileges, particularly
sure.
if you're married to a man or living with a man. But the gay men don't seem to have too big of a problem with bisexual women. And Susie Bright, who is a sex expert and a writer.
Yes, I've had her on my show.
You have had her on my show. She so famously said that the gay men don't seem to care if bisexual men have sex with women. They'll say things like, "Oh, honey, don't worry. Who cares if he has sex with women? He'll be back on his knees sucking cock before the end of the week." They seem to have infinite confidence in
tons of confidence.
The power of male sexuality. Whereas, again, women, our sexuality has been unfortunately undermined to such an extent that I think some lesbians don't have the confidence in the power of women's sexuality, and that women who are bisexual are really sexually drawn to women at least as strongly as to men, and that there's really nothing to worry about. They're not going to defect.
Yeah. It's a sad thing that there isn't that confidence.
It's true. And some gay people have expressed a strong suspicion towards bisexuals because they're fearful that the very existence of bisexuality undermines the idea that gay people don't have a choice about being gay, because there's this whole big thing with the fundamentalist Christians and all that, oh, they think gay people should just choose to be straight.
Sure.
Which, of course, is impossible. And
yeah.
So the fact that bisexuals can, to some extent, choose whether to have a relationship with a man or with a woman or both, that undermines the argument that being gay is a fixed sexual orientation that can't be changed. And so there are some gay people that are fearful that that will make straight people think that that really being gay is a choice or preference rather than something that they really can't change.
That's so sad. That is so sad, because that's so not true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you could see where, I mean, so most straight people are so confused anyway about sexual orientation that you could see where they could actually, you know, get that impression.
Oh, yeah. So not just, you know, and professional people, doctors, it's just mm-hmm. shocking, the misinformation that's out there about gender orientation and even gender.
Yeah.
It's scary, which is why I like to remind my clients, you really should bring your sexual issues to a sexologist,
mm-hmm.
because people who are not trained in it can really... just their fear and their ignorance and their prejudice can really show up in a bad way.
Yes, I'm sure that you, like me, also have to undo a lot of the damage that's been done by probably well-meaning psychologists and therapists.
God, they put the focus on the wrong thing, you know, like, mm-hmm. how do you have sex with a transgender person?
Mm-hmm. Or just pathologize your sexual orientation or your gender orientation rather than realizing that's not your problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, now, one thing you talk about, actually, is that bisexuality is a little like being biracial.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was interesting. Can you explain that?
Well, many people that are biracial find that they spend most of their lives moving back and forth between the two different communities. For instance, if your father's black and your mother's white, you're being raised in essentially an interracial family, and you're going back and forth between different branches of the family. And usually in school, if you're, you know, a child in school, it's hard to know how to socialize and relate to people, because people of different ethnic groups have tended to cluster together. And so which group are you a part of if you're bisexual, if you're biracial? And it's similar to being bisexual, where you don't know which group you're a part of. You don't feel comfortable in either community. And so most of the time you feel like you don't fit in anywhere and that nobody really accepts you and nobody really understands you.
So I wonder what the... I guess really this is one of the reasons it's so important to be able to come out bisexual, even now when it seems kind of chic or stylish for some young girls to mm-hmm. be acting out bisexual. Mm-hmm. Which actually you had a name for that too, motivational bisexuality.
the women that just they would not be having sex with another woman except that the their male partner has kind of pressured them into it, and they're just doing it to please the man, such as like at a sex party or a swing party or something like that.
I see a lot of that, and I find it very disturbing because I'm just waiting for this so-called sexually liberated culture to turn into something that is actually giving women more empowerment around their pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Although,
yeah.
Ironically, some of these so-called motivational bisexuals, I have certainly seen them not even be wanting to do this, and then when they get into it, they discover they really like it, and they may go a lot farther with it than the partner even wants them to.
Yes, it might backfire.
There's some of that try it, you'll like it kind of
thing to it. It's true.
So
it's
they
true.
Might, they might not realize what they're creating.
they don't know. So let's talk about the stages of bisexual identity. Dr. Mary Bradford, also a psychologist, developed the theory of bisexual identity. And the first thing that happens is confusion over sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm.
They might identify as straight or gay or lesbian in order to fit in or be accepted. But their own experience doesn't conform to either community, and they start to feel intense pressure to choose one and identify with it. I certainly remember feeling like that. And
which side are you on?
Yes.
You're off the fence.
God, that was a big deal in college, 1978 at Oregon State University. I was so afraid that the other freshmen were going to find out that I was attracted to women. And I really didn't know what that meant. The first time I ended up getting drunk and having sex with another girl at college, I remember running to the mirror that morning to see if I looked any different because I thought, well, maybe I'm a lesbian now.
Well, I have had known many women who have said, who have come to me for counseling, and they've said, you know, ever since I was very small, I just knew that I was attracted to women, so I assumed I must be a lesbian. And then I grew up, and I liked to fuck girls, so I figured, well, of course, I must be a lesbian. I like to fuck girls.
Sure.
And then suddenly I realized, oh, I'm attracted to men. Well, what's wrong with me? What does that mean? You know, I mean, I just assumed all along that if they were attracted to women, it must mean they were a lesbian. It never kind of occurred to them that there might be another side to this. So it can create really an identity crisis when you're realizing, well, I'm actually attracted to the opposite sex as well. And up to that point, you've had the gay community to be gay in, at least. But now, being bisexual, you have nowhere to go. You know you're not straight. You can't really go back to the straight community. You know you're not straight. But you no longer really feel safe in the gay community either. So it can be a real identity crisis.
Yeah. No, it really can. And I guess the second stage is you discovery of the bisexual label. Choosing to identify as bisexual, and most bisexual people say that discovering the label bisexual was pivotal in understanding their sexual orientation. Most experience relief when they hear the word bisexual for the first time because it comes closer than any other term to describing their lives. Now, I guess the exception to that would be anybody under 40 at this particular time.
Yes. Now, Dr. Bradford did this research about 15 years ago, and she's during her research, she said that universally, everyone she talked to said that when they first heard the word bisexual, they were like, "Wow, this is it! I get it now." Because you know, for many years you just didn't hear that word, and it eventually, you know, surfaced. Now I think people who are younger the word bisexual is kind of part of the culture, and they've heard it, you know, since they were a child. So it's not that word and that concept is not nearly as pivotal for them as
No.
it is for people a little bit older. But still, the choosing to identify as someone who is not straight and not gay and is in that middle ground, whether you call yourself bisexual or call yourself queer or call yourself fluid, that is a pivotal moment when you realize that you are not going to be in one extreme or the other. You are going to be somewhere in the middle.
No,
regardless of the word you use to describe it.
Yes, and then we're back to the whole thing. There's not really a bisexual community, so that can be very disorienting and disappointing for some people. But I think the upside about being bisexual is that it really does give you access to both worlds. You can identify with both straights and gays and fit into both communities if you learn something about both and if you're motivated to do so. And as the joke goes, of course, you have just twice as many options on date night.
That's right, right. Just to have twice as many people to choose from as sexual partners, and that's a big plus. So.
It is a plus. So we're always, but this conversation has whizzed by. It's obviously a very, very fascinating one for myself, and I think probably you, since, but I hope for our listeners as well. Well, let's give them an opportunity here once again to hear about your website and your book. And how they might be able to contact you.
I am in private practice in Berkeley, California, and I do not have a website, but I do have a phone number and an email address, which I will give you. My phone number is 510-841-5307. And I do have my email address is anarchofeminist@yahoo.com. And I do have a book, which, as I said, is not on bisexuality. It's on open relationships. And, of course, many, many bisexual people are engaged in open relationships, certainly not the majority, but a lot of them are. And the book is called Love in Abundance, A Counselor's Advice on Open Relationships.
Fabulous. Fabulous.
And actually, that's one subject we missed was... are bisexuals monogamous or non-monogamous? That's a subject that people ask me about a lot. So
yes,
skipped over that.
The answer is it depends.
It depends. The majority of bisexuals are in monogamous relationships.
Yeah.
They are, in fact, as monogamous as anyone else, which is to say that they often claim they're monogamous when they're not, which is the same as other people.
I absolutely, you know, that's how my marriage started off. We were playing around a little bit, and sometimes we'd see a girlfriend together. Sometimes we'd go off our separate ways and see different girlfriends. But eventually, it became a very monogamous connection. And that you know, what made it sweet for us, though, is that we were actually able to ogle, I should say, some of the same women. So that was
point
fun.
Out women to each other on the street. Oh,
yes. Oh, my
she's
God.
Hot.
Did you see her?
That's one of the great benefits of being bisexual.
It can be. Kathy Labriola, thank you so much for joining me in the Shame Free Zone. And
thank you.
To my listeners, I'm not actually going to be broadcasting live next Monday. I've taken some time off to do research for this program. But I'll be back the following week. And on the 28th, I'm going to be playing a rerun. Now, if you want to suggest a show that you missed, maybe one that you really, really wish you had caught, and you would like me to play that, now's your chance. And you need to get it to me, by Wednesday night, no later than Wednesday night. So you can send that to Veronica@sexwithoutshame.com. That's Veronica@sexwithoutshame.com. And I'll be happy to put that on the air for you. Otherwise, it's going to be a surprise. That's it from the Shame Free Zone. Thanks for tuning in. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you. Sering kesepian. Kenapa tak mutus kabar berita?